Hello, everyone. This is Megan. I just wanted to do a quick note before this episode. If you've been with us a long time, you'll know that Steve and I haven't put out any episodes in a while. Basically, life just got crazy. Both of us took on second jobs, and we didn't have as much time to do the podcast. We are trying to come up with a way to do more episodes for you, whether that's even once a month or twice a month. I don't know that we'll be able to keep up our weekly schedule that we had before, but we are looking at getting things back on track. In the meantime, we wanted to release this. It's kind of our lost episode. We recorded it when we were still doing the podcast weekly, and then never were we able to post it. And it is on Dungeons and Dragons. We did it kind of because the movie was coming out, so if you think about how long ago that was, you'll understand how long we've been kind of sitting on this episode. But that's all from me, and I hope you enjoy it. And we just want to say thank you guys so much for listening. We were hitting about 25,000 downloads, and it's just amazing how many people are still subscribing and listening, even though we haven't been really faithful in putting stuff out. So thanks again. Here we go. Welcome to the Stop Ruining My Childhood podcast.
A sometimes nostalgic, sometimes cynical look back at pop culture.
Join us as we revisit movies, cartoons, and live-action TV of the 80s and 90s and ask the question,
does this hold up or did I just ruin my childhood?
My name's Megan.
And I'm Steve.
Today, we are talking about the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon.
We sure are.
Which we streamed on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube has all the episodes.
All the episodes. And we're going to have some interesting conversation because both Steve and I have played Dungeons & Dragons.
Yep.
Steve way more extensively than me. But we'll talk a little bit about the history of the game and the moral panic that it caused in the 80s.
In the cartoon itself.
And then the cartoon itself, and we'll get into the episodes that the dice chose for us today.
That's right. We rolled the dice to choose our episodes, as all things do in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah. So before we do that, we have
my favorite segment, the non-sponsored snack review.
Yes.
And today's non-sponsored snack review is astronaut ice cream.
Okay. Here's the deal about astronaut ice cream. I don't know if you know this about me, Steve. I'm obsessed with astronaut ice cream.
I did not know that.
So the one that we got, my brother gave to us, is for the podcast.
Yep.
And it's kind of like Dungeons & Dragons isn't exactly space themed, but
it's fantastic.
It is fantastic. So my brother gave us a astronaut ice cream sandwich.
Yep.
Which I can't have the wafer part of, but I could eat a little bit of the middle.
Yes.
Astronaut ice cream is freeze-dried, and it's sealed in a pouch, and it was actually developed by the Whirlpool Corporation.
Oh.
For NASA, for the Apollo missions. So the idea basically was they had freeze-dried food so that it could be on long-duration space flights, like to the moon, because the weight of water, but also doesn't have to be refrigerated. Right?
Gotcha.
So it's not floating around as much. And I first had this at Cape Canaveral when we went on like a little, they have like little tours of NASA and stuff. And they have this in the gift shop. And it's in the gift shop of a lot of like little science museums. I think that's where Tim might have gotten his.
Oh, okay.
But Tim and I became like obsessed with this, and every time we went to a museum, we would be like, "Do they have astronaut ice cream in the gift shop?" Because it only costs like a couple at that point in time. It only costs like maybe $2 or something, right. You know. But they, they remove the water from the ice cream by lowering the pressure, and then the ice sublimates from a solid to a gas. The ice cream is in a vacuum chamber. And the remaining water crystallizes. And then
that's, yeah, and then it vaporizes, and then the result is
astronaut ice cream.
Food with the water sucked out of it, basically.
Right. Yeah. Like dehydrated food almost.
Yeah. And
but freeze-dried.
But freeze-dried, yeah. It was developed on request, and they said it wasn't all that popular. Astronaut Mike Massimino said it was disgusting and more closely related to a building material than a food. Which okay. is apparently how you kind of feel about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, me and Mike are on the same page, because I felt the astronaut ice cream, when I tasted it, closely resembled to someone firing foam insulation into my mouth.
Stop it.
The we had Neapolitan, so we had strawberry, vanilla, and chocolate.
Yeah.
The strawberry, the vanilla tasted pretty much just like insulation, like someone just put foam in my mouth. The strawberry feels like somebody fired foam insulation into my mouth hole and then spritzed like a hint of strawberry in the air.
I totally disagree with you on that.
The chocolate was a lot more chocolatey, and that felt more like somebody like coated a piece of styrofoam in Hershey's chocolate syrup,
mm-hmm.
and then jammed it in my mouth hole.
Okay.
How
were the wafers? Did they taste like styrofoam?
The wafers, or chocolate bread, if you will, in the ice cream sandwich, were probably not. They were not as bad as the ice cream itself. I felt like just had a very weird styrofoamy consistency.
Well, the consistency is what the consistency is. It's supposed to be like, as a kid especially, it's kind of cool, it's crunchy, it's different. But it's like, I used to always have this dream that I lived in Buffalo, New York as a kid.
That was your dream?
Outside of Buffalo, no. As a kid, I lived outside of Buffalo, New York, and I love playing in the snow, but I hate the cold. And I always had a dream that, like, you could play in the snow, but it would be warm, and, like, wouldn't that be amazing? And astronaut ice cream is kind of the same thing. I love ice cream, but sometimes because of the cold, you can't taste the flavors as much. This is scientific. You have, you just don't know it. If you microwave your ice cream just a little bit...
Don't science-splain ice cream to me.
I'm just saying, if you microwave your ice cream a little bit, I'm not saying, like, ice cream soup, but if you microwave it a little bit, you can actually taste the flavors better.
I think that's in your mind.
It's not in my mind. Okay. It's science. So the vanilla, I kind of agree with you on, but I thoroughly enjoyed the strawberry.
Really?
I like the chocolate okay. It tastes a little bit like pudding, but the strawberry, I could have eaten a whole another thing of just the strawberry. Delightful. Wow. Delightful. I'm going with a 4.
Oh, no. I'm giving a very generous 2.
Okay. I'm surprised you gave it a 2.
Only because...
The wafer.
I will ever only give a 1, and that is to Circus Peanuts, which we will never eat on this program.
You gave a 1 to something else, too.
Well, then they must have been really bad.
I don't know.
Because Circus Peanuts is that's my 1 in my mind.
I know what we gave a 1 to. We gave a 1 to the Aero Bar. Because remember, it tasted like chocolate. It was like fake chocolate, and it...
That's a possibility.
If you eat an Aero Bar, we talked about this like months ago, it kind of foams in your mouth. It's so awful. All right, so 3 dragons.
All right, yeah, 3 dragons.
Oh, we can't do that because we can't cut live things in half.
Three dice out of five.
We do 1 out of 5 for the snack, 1 out of 10 for the show.
Yeah.
So 3 isn't too bad. It's middling.
It is not bad. You know, listen, to be honest, you really ran the score up with your 4, which was way more than this deserves.
I think that this is a little bit of nostalgic glasses, because when I eat it, I feel like I'm right back there as a kid. Gotcha. You know?
Maybe the problem is, did you put it in the microwave for a few seconds?
No, it would burn in the microwave. It doesn't have any water in it. I feel like you didn't hear the whole explanation about the freeze drying. All right. So, Steve, can you give us an overview of the show?
Sure. So, basically, this is a cartoon that is about 6 friends who go on a roller coaster at an amusement park, and it magically transports them to a fantasy world of Dungeons and Dragons. And so each one of them becomes a type of character. There's a wizard, a thief, a barbarian, a cavalier, a ranger, and an acrobat. And so they each get different like weapons and powers, and they are basically walked through this world and given goals and trying to get home. And their help is this little small bald guy called the Dungeon Master.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fighting Venger, who is like the source of evil in this world.
And a couple other bad guys along the way, but that was the main bad guy.
Yeah, Venger's kind of he's like the Skeletor to their He-Man.
Yeah.
And so it's this constant battle between them and Venger, and they're and ultimately just trying to get home. It's a fantasy cartoon. It's kind of neat, and it is loosely based off of the Dungeons and Dragons game.
So let's talk about the game, because I think your description might be a little confusing if people haven't really heard of or played the game before.
Sure. So Dungeons and Dragons, or D&D, or D&D, but it's a fantasy tabletop role-playing game, or what we call TRPG, tabletop mm-hmm. role-playing game. Originally designed by Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson, and they originally started it in the very early 70s. It was published for the first time by TSR in 1974.
Oh, that's earlier than I thought.
Yeah, and it was started a little bit. I mean, it was created before that, but that was the first publishing of it.
That's interesting, because I would have thought 78, 79, because I think of it as more of an 80s thing than a 70s thing.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, I mean, this show is basically 10 years after it started.
Yeah.
Right, this cartoon, yeah, the cartoon that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so it really took off quickly in the 70s. And by the early 80s, when this cartoon came out, it was already pretty popular. It had spawned a number of other similar games.
Mm-hmm.
But Dungeons & Dragons is still recognized commonly by everyone as really the first role-playing game in the beginning of the role-playing industry. And that's even a strong influence on role-playing video games.
Right. RPGs usually they're called.
Right. Yeah. But it all kind of stems back to Dungeons & Dragons. And there was other kind of, at the time, there was other, like, war-based games. Like, where you'd have, like, you know, minis with, like, I'm the British Army fighting, like, the American Army.
So you're saying that it's a tabletop game and you're talking about minis, but it kind of explained what those are.
So they're little, you know, maybe 1 to 2 inch miniature versions of characters or people or monsters.
Kind of like the little army men.
Yep, they've been made out of tin or, you know, traditionally tin or cast metal. Nowadays they're made out of plastic or resin.
And people paint
them. People paint them. Yeah. You know? And you see them, they're very similar. The Dungeons & Dragons miniatures obviously are fantasy races, people, characters, and enemies. But they're based in very similar to, like, if you've ever seen hobbyists that make, like, landscapes of battles.
Mm-hmm.
And they have little miniature soldiers and things like that. It's pretty much the same
so thing. So, essentially, the game is kind of set up like the show, right? Where you have people coming together to do quests.
You do, yeah. And it's the game is run, basically, and this is kind of what I was saying, what made it different from anything like that was the fact that this game, the player got to choose who they were. Got to create their character.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
They got to decide what kind of character they were, you know, the weapons they would have, everything like that. And then the group and the game itself would be run by a person who was the designated dungeon master. And they basically made sure everyone followed the rules, and they also guided the story along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, because we talked about Clue a couple weeks ago, and we talked about how the game Clue, sometimes people would have, like, murder mystery parties based on that game.
Right.
But, like, what Steve's saying is, in that game, you're given, like, Mrs. Peacock, and all of her traits are there, and her backstory's there, and then you might play that out.
Yeah.
In a murder mystery role-playing kind of setup. But this does, I didn't think about the fact before that you are completely creating your character. And now they've manuals, right? Which was that always part of the game?
Always part of the game, yeah. Actually, Dungeons and Dragons is a little bit of a misnomer because right now it's on 5th edition.
Okay.
But there's actually been 11 editions of Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, interestingly enough, there's been 11 editions. 1974 was the original.
Okay.
1977 was the basic set, first version.
Mm-hmm.
1977 was Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. What happened was the basic set was like a really dumbed-down, simple version of the rules for people who really didn't want to get too far into
it. Or who had never played before.
And then they did Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, which really had a lot more advanced rules, and it really went into a lot more, you could play a lot more different types of, like, races and classes and things like that. Then they did a second basic, a third basic, and in 1989 they did AD&D, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons 2nd Edition, which is now just called 2nd Edition.
And that's what the cartoon is based on.
No, that was 89. The cartoon is based off of probably the 1981 basic set.
Okay. So just, can you kind of sum up, you're saying like races and classes. So what would, we mentioned a couple that were in the cartoon, right?
Right.
So essentially I could say at this point in time, not now because it's changed with all the 11 or 5 edition, however you want to count them. So I could say, my name will be Liliana, and I am going to be a acrobat. And then I would, in the rules, it would give me, like, spells at different levels that I could do, or
it would give you
powers, or whatever.
Told you which dice. Dice are a big part of the game,
And
there's a lot of different types of dice. 20-sided, 12-sided, 10-sided, 8, 6, 4. Right? So a number of different types of, and it would say which dice you roll, how much damage you do, your weapons, all that kind of stuff is all handled by the dice.
And then the dungeon master would kind of lead you through the quest. So they would say, like, now you're coming upon, like, a village. And sometimes, we know from playing this with people, you have a group who's like, let's burn it to the ground.
Yes,
and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. There might be help in that village. They might be good people in the village. Stop being murder hobos.
Traditionally, Dungeons & Dragons and some of their rule books or first edition, there's some of their earlier editions, had some adventures in them.
Oh, okay.
And they've published a lot. They still publish adventures that you can actually go through.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dungeon Master kind of leads people through the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's become very popular over the years that most Dungeon Masters get a little bored of that. And also, you can't just keep doing the same adventure.
Right.
Right? So a lot of Dungeon Masters started doing what they call homebrew, which is basically using the same rules in world building, but creating their own adventures and walking the players through.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we'll get into with our memories, because mine are very recent of playing this game. But I will say, I like the fact that it's kind of like, here are the tropes of the genre, build your own book.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like that, in a way, that I could see for people who are newer to it or who don't want to maybe take as much time. I know, too, like, we have a club at my school, and I know other people who have played, like, in high school clubs and things like that, where that's where they start off with, like, just some basics so that it's not, like, crazy, so complicated. And then you can kind of advance.
Yeah.
Right? Interesting. Do you have anything else you want to share about it?
No. It's just, like I said, it's kind of, the cartoon takes a few liberties. A lot of the things you see in the cartoon now aren't, like an acrobat's not a class anymore. I think that became a monk.
Mm-hmm.
Cavalier was also, I think, a class in the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. That's, now it would be a fighter or a paladin. But they're all based off of medieval kind of warriors and things like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So getting into the show, what I find, this is, to me, fascinating because it was co-produced with TSR, the group that put out the game, right?
Yes.
And also Marvel. And it's the same group that did Jim Henson's Muppet Babies and Jem and the Holograms, which does not surprise. And also, one of the people associated with it later did Garfield and Friends. And that doesn't surprise me because Muppet Babies and Gem and the Holograms, we both rated pretty highly. Because those shows did, I mean, they had merchandising, but they were not just built for the merchandising. And I feel like the same thing with this show a little bit.
You know,
the storytelling is there.
What's interesting about this cartoon, too, is those two were cartoons where the merchandising and toys later. And things were geared at younger people.
Yeah.
Dungeons and Dragons is really an adolescent to teen to adult game.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the cartoon, too, but I think the cartoon has a wider reach. But Gem really was, like, when we watched Gem and the Holograms, Steve, I always thought of it as a kid's show, but it's like a soap opera, but just with a cartoon. Like, remember at one point she was like going through the accounts and then yeah. she found out that her company was part of a hostile
remember
takeover.
Remember when they bombed the girls' home?
Yeah, they bombed.
Yeah,
it was
dark.
The foster kids. So really the part that Steve described with the origin story, surprisingly, there is no origin story in the pilot. We watched the pilot. That was my choice for the pilot because I thought that maybe it would have the origin story. No, the origin story is only ever shown.
It's in the introduction.
In the intro.
Yeah, they show it in the intro and then you jump right in.
Yeah, which I think is actually kind of interesting because I think it's interesting that they were just like, yeah, we're not gonna really take time to do that.
Megan, in the classic art of D&D, no one wants to just play around with the words. They want to jump right into the action.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it doesn't, and you're right, that you might have part of one game be getting there, but for the most part, you're pulled through the portal, you're there, whatever.
Well, like, yeah, and you know, when you play a game, each group member might have its own background that comes out, like, in the game,
mm-hmm.
but you always start an adventure as you're all there, you've all just started, whether you met in a tavern or on a job or whatever, but everyone's starting with their stuff and they're almost just like this cartoon dropped you into.
Yeah, and there was, you know, it's very interesting because in the early 80s, we also have the Satanic Panic, and Dungeons and Dragons was a big part of that. In part, I think, because it's fantasy. And it's something that teenagers were doing that parents very often didn't understand. You and I have even tried to explain this to our parents, my parents and yours, and they're yes. kind of like, what? You know, that they yeah. don't kind of get it. And so there was this uproar. There's also someone who, at least one person who did self-harm or committed suicide who had been playing the game, and then it was blamed on the game, right?
Right, even though I'm sure that the person probably had a number of other
things going
mental health
on, yeah.
issues, things like that. But the parents didn't understand, you're right. I tried to get my mom to play with me and my friends when we were teenagers, and my mom played for like 10 minutes and said, you know what would make this better? Weed. And we're like, no.
I want to know which...
No.
if this was your bio mom or your...
It was not.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So yeah, the 80s had kind of an uproar from parents, and because of that, they also complained that the show was too violent. Now, this is pretty early 80s, right? This started in 83, this cartoon. It ran for almost 3 seasons.
Yes.
But it's before some of the other changes that allowed some more violence on TV for kids right. shows. And they also didn't have quite the same setup with like as G.I. Joe did with like The Lesson or He-Man, right? But they made Eric, who is the Cavalier, he's kind of whiny and stubborn. And the reason they did that was to tell parents, oh, this is all about teamwork.
Right.
And so you do see the kids working together to overcome the obstacle or to finish this little part of the quest and like that kind of thing.
What's hilarious as well about this, the fact that people were worried that it was too violent, is none of the weapons that the kids have are actually violent weapons.
No, they have like right? a cloak.
They have like a cloak that makes one person invisible. One person has like a bow, like a staff that they pole vault with,
mm-hmm.
right? The cavalier or the fighter doesn't even have a sword. He has a shield, which is a defensive weapon, yeah. right? And the archer, who would probably be the most offensive.
Well, the barbarian.
Yeah, he has but a club. He's a little kid with a stick, yeah. basically. The archer has magic arrows that he fires that don't actually strike the person. They, like, wrap around them.
Yeah.
So it's very not violent.
Yeah, and yet they had to run a warning at the beginning of the episode stating Dungeons & Dragons has been linked to real-life violent deaths. They aired that at the yeah. beginning of each episode.
Starting in
like
85, which was probably the last season. Yeah, and probably why.
It's one of the reasons that I think that it didn't do well. We also have the thief who only is named a thief in the intro. So all the other people are like cavalier, ranger, mm-hmm. right? And they call the thief Sheila, her name.
Right.
Because parents, again, didn't want a thief being seen as cool. So they call her, they say the thief, the cavalier, the barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
But they only call her Sheila, which I think is funny. I don't know why that name makes me laugh. And then my last fun fact is that, well, it's not really my last, but one of my last fun facts, they didn't air the finale.
Oh, they never did?
No. And so they eventually, a finale was written. And basically, like, fans did, like, a version of it. Like, yeah. there's, like, and it was on the, like, a fan-made final episode based on that script.
Okay.
But because of that, they never get home.
Wow, that's dark.
And so there's stuff in other D&D things that kind of have little Easter eggs or callbacks to this.
Okay.
And there's an implication that two of the kids died fighting the many-headed dragon.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. I have one more fun fact, but I want to save it for when we get into the episodes. Because okay, I found it out after we watched the episodes, and I don't want to kind of spoil it. So we'll leave off here. We're going to go to our break and our very serious, very authentically true and heartfelt Patreon ad.
Yes.
And then when we come back, we're going to get into our memories and then the full review and recap. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Megan.
I'm Steve.
I really hope that you took to heart the message that you just heard.
It really strikes us somewhere deep inside.
Deep inside. Listen, we have been trying to really expand what we're watching in all seriousness, and we've had to rent a number of things for this. The Incredible Hulk, and our next week is, you know, Warrior Princess. We're going to have to rent that too, and we have podcast fees, so yeah.
The more we expand our library of things that we review, and the deeper we go kind of down the 80s and 90s rabbit hole,
yeah.
the harder it is sometimes to find some of these things, and so we have to really, we do have to pay for a lot of different streaming services, a lot of different things.
And we enjoy that, but a lot of them we only have for this podcast.
Yes.
So, at any rate, let's get into D&D. I know that you apparently played it and tried to get your mom to play, which is interesting to me.
Well, we were playing, and she kind of wanted to jump in. And we're like, okay. And then she was like, no, this isn't as fun. My mother was kind of a late 70s, like, hard rocker in mm-hmm. high school.
Yeah.
And it was not hard partying gotcha. For her.
Did you ever watch the cartoon, though?
I did, yeah. I mean, I would have been young still at this time, probably 6 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember watching it, and I don't think it was in reruns, because this is not a rerun no. cartoon very often. But I remember seeing a number of the episodes. I feel like they might have done a video game based off the cartoon as mm-hmm. well. But yeah, I wouldn't say I've seen all of the 20... was it 25 or 27,
28.
28 episodes?
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen probably a handful of them, and I remembered the basic idea of it.
This is interesting, because you would have been watching the cartoon long before you played the game.
Long before. I didn't get into Dungeons & Dragons until I was probably 14 or 15.
Interesting.
And then played it for a number of years as a teen, and then got back into it later as an adult.
Yeah, it surprises me and doesn't surprise me. First of all, I did not even know that this was a cartoon. And then we basically, you thought of an idea for a movie you wanted to see, and then we kind of built the month around that movie.
Right.
And kind of themed it, and we thought that would be fun for people.
But you were like, we need a cartoon. I was like, Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. And you were like, what?
I was like, there's a cartoon of that? So on the one hand, it surprises me because I, in high school, had some friends where we did some murder mystery parties and some role-playing stuff. I do like dressing up. I do like acting. I don't like repeating the same lines every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I had gone into improv, I would have liked that. If I could be quick enough. I'm not as quick as my brother. But my point is that I do think it would have been something that I would have enjoyed. On the other hand, I did grow up in a pretty conservative Christian household, and I don't know how that would have gone over.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, I will say my parents are very open in terms of like I know people that were not allowed to read, what's that Madeleine L'Engle book that they made into that horrible movie? Wrinkle in Time.
Yes.
And my parents are like, yeah, we don't get our theology from fiction. Like, read whatever you want, basically. Mm-hmm. So, I don't... But something like this, where it's interactive, and it's kind of mysterious, and parents don't understand, I don't know how that would have gone over. It's interesting to me.
Well, you know, the other part, too, is back then, and I introduced you to Dungeons & Dragons after we were married, so as an adult, and in kind of the new era of D&D.
Right.
When I was a teen and younger in playing D&D, it was kind of a different game. Mm-hmm. It was the same systems, the same everything, but it was a lot more kind of gameplay, less roleplay.
Oh, interesting.
The last 10 to 15 years... with the advance of, like, Critical Role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are all professional voice actors who also wanted to be into Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
And so they started playing and then, doing YouTube videos, things like that. Acquisitions Incorporated, which is another group to do the same thing, right? Now you have people with acting ability that started doing it. So they really started focusing on the role play piece so that really... In a session of D&D, you might be doing half the time role-playing out the conversations, the adventure, and half the time fighting.
Or if you ever listen to Dungeons & Daddies, which is a podcast we love.
Excellent podcast.
The amount of gameplay is about 5%.
Right, it's a lot of role-playing.
They really are improvers and comedians who don't so much understand the actual game.
Yes, yeah. And it's influenced it. I'll be honest. I mean, there's still in the D&D community, there are people who, when they're looking for a new game, will say like, "I'm looking for an action heavy game," or I prefer to do more role play. You know, I'm kind of a 50-50 person. I think that the increased role play that's come into it, more dressing up, more really getting into your character. Some people try to do accents and things like that, right? The DMs especially. I've tried a few myself.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just makes the experience a lot more realistic for everybody and a lot more fun.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's important to keep the gameplay going, but I think about a 50-50 split is where I've fallen. And that's kind of where you entered in. So somebody who had a theater background and enjoyed that, you know, can really, I think it's why it's become even more popular in the last 15 to 20 years, because it's pulled in that different demographic.
I also do like hearing myself talk. That probably has a lot to do with it.
Well, and you know, those things, not just you, but it's one of the reasons also that, you know, when I was a teen and even a young adult playing D&D, it was almost unheard of to find girls that played D&D.
Yeah.
It was almost all male. Now it's almost a 50-50. There's a lot more girls and women playing Dungeons & Dragons.
And I do
now.
Think that that is one of the things, because I would have, and again, not now, but Megan at like 12.
Yeah.
I would have been like, that's a boy game. Right. Let's go play Mall Madness or the mystery date or whatever.
Okay.
Right? Like the that kind of thing. So the cartoon,
we started with episode one, season one.
We did. That was my choice. Yeah, I chose to do the pilot.
The Night of No Tomorrow.
The Night of No Tomorrow. I kind of at first didn't pay attention to the preview because I thought that it was... Sometimes you have a preview of the episode, mm-hmm. right? Like we had that like with G.I. Joe and a few other things. But this was not a preview, as we said. It was the kids getting on
It goes straight into the intro.
They're getting on a Dungeons & Dragons ride. And then they get sucked into the magic land. And we have a magician, a thief, a barbarian, a ranger, a cavalier, and then a unicorn that runs into their arms and is their...
A baby unicorn. Yeah, little baby Uni.
Because they're very creative with the name. And then the dungeon master, who is... Looks kind of like... I don't think an elf is the right word, but...
No, he's probably like a halfling or a gnome. He's small, yes.
He looks like a gnome. Then we have a five-headed dragon right away.
Yeah, this is... As a D&D nerd, all right? They threw this in because everyone would know this, but it's Tiamat. And Tiamat is still a personality in Dungeons & Dragons. It's the queen of the evil dragons. Mm-hmm. But she has like 650 hit points. She's ridiculously overpowered.
Well, but that's kind of the point to show that they're not at a high level of their powers because Bobby is a barbarian and he tries to get the dragon. He is about 6 years old.
Yes.
Maybe seven. His sister is a thief. That's Sheila. And she tries to do magic. And the dungeon master's like, good job. Here's a quest. So the thing that I noticed right off the bat with this cartoon is, man, does it move fast. I usually complain, and I did last week with The Incredible Hulk. I don't like shows that are slow. This was like boom, 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 boom. It was so much. You could have taken this first episode and made it into like three or four episodes.
100%.
Yeah. And I, in some ways, I appreciate it, but in some ways, I was like, this is hard to keep up with.
Yeah, the Dungeon Master sends them on their first quest, which is to go to the town of Helix.
Mm-hmm.
And for the celebration, and that there might be some clue for them to get home, and warns them to beware of Venger, who will be in a different shape or form, because he's basically represents all of evil, and you'll know him by his white hair.
Yes. So, we learn that Helix had been overrun by dragons at one point, then they're hungry while they're going. There's so much. Yeah. So it's going to sound a little frenetic as we explain it, but they get hungry while they're going to Helix, which mm-hmm. was once overrun by dragons, but then the dragons went away with magic spell from Merlin. Yes. Right. The magician, Presto.
Yes.
Says that he'll make them some magic burgers. He'll conjure them up from his hat. And he conjures up cow with a bell around her neck. So again, showing that they haven't mastered these powers.
It reminds me of like, was it
Clarabelle,
yeah. the milk cow from Disney.
Yeah,
it reminded me a lot of that.
I think it's supposed to be, and it's a nice like little like funny moment.
Yeah.
So they see all these signs for Merlin's castle.
But they can't see the castle.
And it keeps leading them in circles. And then they go, we forgot to look up.
And the castle is floating on a cloud.
In the air.
Dun, dun, dun.
There's a gold ladder that comes down from the castle. They all climb up it. But Uni can't climb. And her little hooves are like paddling at the ladder.
But instead of grabbing Uni and bringing her up, they're like, just wait here. We won't forget about you. And they leave her.
They leave her. It's so sad.
In the desert alone.
Yeah, with no water and no food and no anything. Bye, Uni. So they go up. Eric the Cavalier keeps telling us how rich his family is.
Yeah.
Like, we hear, well,
I... He flexes a lot.
I've been to a place like this before. This reminds me of a ski chalet I went to. Shut up, Eric.
Yeah.
Then, Diana, we learn, is an acrobat. That's her class.
Right, which I don't recall ever being. It probably wasn't one of the originals, but by the time I played, it was never a class. Never either was a cavalier.
Well, but you can do a lot as an acrobat.
That's true.
She does. What I liked, I want to say this right here with Diana, because she's flipping around and using her staff, as you said, like a pole vaulter almost. I think it is very interesting, the choice they made, that the girls on this team are equal to the guys. And it's not that they're above them, and it's not that they're below, because
everybody's part of the team.
Everybody's part of the team. Now, you do have the Ranger kind of being the leader of the team, but
Hank, yep.
It's not a situation like with He-Man, where, like, the women are always damsels in distress and have to be saved.
Tila was a master fighter.
Yeah, but But I liked how the women were portrayed in this, the girls.
They were, yes. So they meet Merlin.
Yes.
And who, at first, looks like he has white hair.
Yep.
But he takes his hat off, and he's bald.
And he says what is a line that, really, I think adults more would appreciate. He says, "No matter how great of a magician I am, I can't regrow my own hair."
Yeah.
And he's which I think is funny.
Long, flowing, starry robe, like you would think of Merlin, and carrying a rabbit around with him, which I guess you would kind of connect with a magician, but not a wizard, really.
Right. Yeah. So we hear more about the Helix backstory.
Yep.
There was Venger, who vowed vengeance on them.
Yes.
We don't really know why. Merlin drove out the evil, and they celebrate the Wind Terror leaving each year. But he does say Merlin cast a spell that drove out the evil. Yeah. And I was like, why is he talking in third person? And we find out later.
Right. That's but a then clue. Tiamat walks into the floating castle.
Yeah.
This giant five-headed dragon. And I'm like, how did Tiamat find them in the floating castle? But she did.
Yeah. And
she's angry.
Well, she's the queen. She can find them anywhere. She's coming for Bobby, who's like, I'm going to get you. Again, you're six, and she has five heads.
Yeah, you have 4 hit points, and she has, like, 615.
So Merlin saves him, and the Ranger hits Tiamat with golden arrows. Diana, the acrobat, does some flippy things to get up on top of, like, a chandelier kind of thing. And they take a carpet that Presto conjures.
Yes.
And they put it over a dungeon.
This huge hole in the floor.
And they get the dragon to fall into the hole in the floor. And you're laughing. Now, I will say, it is really cool teamwork, though.
It's good teamwork, but the fact that he's like, I'll just create this magical huge rug, and he unrolls it, and then this huge dragon falls for, like, the oldest pitfall in the book.
And also, the dragon can breathe fire and can fly. So I don't know how this is holding them. But I also thought it was funny that we got a dungeon and a dragon in our first episode.
We did, like, yeah.
They were like, let's really hit this title.
Yeah.
It's not like that George R. R. Martin one where they didn't have dragons for like 2 seasons.
Right, Game of Thrones. Yeah. And it's also great, I like that they had both Dungeons & Dragons in there, because any of you out there listening that have actually played Dungeons & Dragons know that it's a rarity to actually have either or both.
Yeah, I know, so it's hilarious to me. So Merlin says that was amazing, and he thinks that Presto really has what it takes, and he wants to keep him on as an apprentice.
Yeah, Merlin offers Presto to stay with him forever and be groomed into a wizard.
That's the way I'm putting it. It is a little creepy the way he says that.
Yeah.
Like, you will leave all your friends. You'll be here forever with me. You'll never leave. So there's a cauldron that answers all the questions that are in this book. Presto starts looking for a spell to go home. And accidentally conjures a horde of dragons.
Yeah.
Well, his, or a murder of his dragons, good or magic pride
unlocks the spell.
Yes. And then we find out it's Venger.
Venger was dressed up as Merlin and tricked Presto.
And he switched the spells. And it takes them after this. After all of this, we cut over to the town of Helix, where they're having a celebration. My favorite part is the fortune teller. That, because I feel like that is a very D&D thing to have. Yes. And then a fortune teller comes and tells you, like, whatever. They're also, like, playing cricket or something. And then they're like, hey, the white hair, we thought it was H-A-I-R, but it was H-A-R-E. He even said, this is my white hair. It's not a rabbit. It's a hare.
Yeah, so that was Venger.
The whole time.
Yeah, and then they have to go back and try to save Presto.
This is pretty difficult to explain to children who don't yet understand homophones and homonyms. So I put, though, this is a great story. The village is evacuated. They come up with a plan to destroy the dragons. They send Tiamat, and Presto actually is a good magician.
Yeah, yeah.
And helps.
The others have a great plan. They release Tiamat from the dungeon that they trapped her in, because the only thing Venger's afraid of is Tiamat.
Yes.
As he rightly should be. And so they release Tiamat, and she chases Venger off. And then Presto succeeds in recasting Merlin's spell to get rid of the dragons and save the village.
And then we have a little tag that now they have to go on to the next part of their quest. So the journey continues. Mm-hmm. And Eric doesn't want to ride with anybody. He wants his own horse. And Presto once again conjures
a cow
with a bell on its
neck. Which then licks Eric on the face.
Yeah, well, licks Eric on the face. And I thought it was very quick moving and sometimes too much, but I also think it's trying to get a lot of action into the first episode.
It's a lot of action.
But it's the first episode as well.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. So then we go on to the one that the dice picked.
Episode 15. The Treasure of Tardos.
So now we're in season 2.
Yep.
Because these had pretty short seasons for a cartoon compared to some of the other cartoons we've seen.
They really did.
It is also because they put a lot of effort into the story.
Yeah, they did. Stuff. And we open up with little Bobby trying to bathe the baby unicorn.
Yeah. They're playing in the water. And then all of a sudden there's a sea monster.
And it almost eats Eric. And I was kind of cheering for the sea monster at this point.
I know. We were kind of hoping.
You know, is this weird of me? This is going to be a deep cut for some of you out there listening, but I know you'll get it. Is it weird of me that Eric, in my mind, looks like I imagine Edmund from The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, that's an interesting connection there. We're going to watch The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the original BBC. I know.
That's Easter. That's a connection we just made.
You guys, I'm so excited. Steve's going to hate it, but I'm gonna relish in all 3 hours of it. All right. It's not 3 hours, Steve.
So,
yes, it is.
So the DM pops up again, mm-hmm. and he just pops in and out. Like, he shows up and then disappears before they could talk to him, really. But he pops in and basically tells them to go to Tardos Keep,
mm-hmm.
and to help save the land from the Demo Dragon.
Yes, it's part demon, part dragon.
Yes.
And it has a power strong enough that it could destroy the realm. And then they pull out a map, which I kind of like, too, because I feel like that is part of D&D, having a map and doing the world building and all of that. So the map, they're like, Tardis Keep, that's over there beyond the Dustlands. And all I can think of is, like, we don't go there, Simba.
Yeah.
That's the darkness that we don't look at. So they travel there, and there's an orc.
Yeah, they find that the keep is surrounded by orc soldiers, which in this world work for Venger.
And then my notes here, Steve, say weapons led by shadow demon. I don't know what happened with my typing.
Did you have an aneurysm? While
I think that I meant to do maybe autocorrect and I didn't, maybe. I don't know. But there's a shadow demon flying around with Venger.
Yeah.
And kind of doing his bidding. I'm not sure. Somewhere in the middle we must have missed. I'm assuming
somewhere in the end, in season one or the beginning of season two, this was a new character introduced.
It's really cool. It's a really cool bad guy. And the way that they draw him is like, you know, somewhat transparent, right? Like you can see through him a little bit. So he does look like kind of a ghost or something. So I thought that was neat.
But the group sneaks past them and gets into the keep, which I liked this too, because very often in a Dungeons & Dragons game, sometimes there's things you can't beat.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't want to fight and you want to sneak. And a lot of times you have to roll to see if you can like stealthily move by mm-hmm. without like making a racket. And so that's kind of what this was, is they were sneaking by and they did sneak past them and they were able to make it into the keep. And that's where they meet Serenara, Queen of Tardos.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on Serenara?
I thought that she looked a lot like, who's the She-Ra?
I thought that too.
And
I wrote that down.
And she's also dressed a lot. It's interesting. It's like a mashup. She's dressed a lot like, the women in Wonder Woman.
Okay. Like where, the Amazonians.
No, they're not like in, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm thinking of Supergirl. They all are wearing like Grecian dresses.
Okay, yeah.
Style. Grecian style dresses and stuff. But I thought that it was interesting. They have at one point, she cries and her tear falls into a reflecting pool. And the animation just really well done. We're not getting here what we sometimes get in 80s cartoons where there's like, you know, loops of motion.
Yeah.
To have like a cheaper, you know, deal. So I thought it was really good.
This reminded me of like an advanced Hanna-Barbera animation.
Yes, that is exactly how I would describe it. I like that. I like that a lot.
So they basically get this story from Serenara that Venger is after the treasure of Tardos.
Yes.
Which apparently is this dragon bane.
Yeah, it's not what we thought it was going to be.
It's like an herb that can get rid of dragons. The Dungeon Master pops in, although he's disguised, but he gives Uni a little, like, necklace.
It's the kind of thing you would put on a horse after they win a race.
Yeah, it's like a little wreath.
Like a wreath, yeah.
And I put down, Dungeon Master is friends with the Tardosians, Tardanites, people of Tardos. I don't know the exact...
Yeah, but they're like... The Dungeon Master sent us. Do you know him? And they're like, oh, the Dungeon Master sent you? It is kind of funny. Yeah, so the two... Then we see Demo. And he's ordered to attack. It's a two-headed dragon. And it's being pulled out in chains because it's that strong. But it also has hooves and tentacles like a chimera. And so that was kind of neat. As well, that's kind of like the demon part of it, right?
It was interesting. Yeah, it did not look like Tiamat, and it didn't Mm-mm. look like the other dragons we had seen in the first episode.
No, and so again, so
they did a good job.
Yeah,
of that.
They did. So it takes their weapons.
Right
now, they're weaponless.
Weaponless,
and the weapons. Once it takes them, it pulls up one of the kids and also Uni.
Yeah. No, it once it takes the weapons.
Oh, that it.
It turns on Venger.
Yes, that's right.
And breaks its chains because the magic in their weapons gives it like an extra oomph and it's able to break free from Venger's control.
And the Dungeon Master has told them that they're going to have to basically team up with their enemy to defeat this greater evil.
Yes.
So, then we go into like an underground city, which is sort of like a dungeon again, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, but you know, they go into this underground city and then it opens up and I'm like, I wrote down, I'm like, the inside of the keep is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really neat.
It looks
neat.
Like a garden with white structures.
I think that it reminded me of an episode of Star Trek. I think that they, it's like a utopian thing underneath here.
Yes.
And again, it's a, it's almost like Hanging Gardens of Babylon or something, something like that. So this is where the queen cries and her tear goes in the reflecting pool.
Yeah, it's really good. And as you mentioned, this is also where Diana, the acrobat, puts two and two together and realizes they need to work with Venger based off of the DM's weird generic riddles.
Yes. Yes. So they go seek him out and they kind of make a truce with him. And
he gives them a talisman.
Yes.
To use against the Demo Dragon.
Then it takes Uni and it takes Eric.
Yeah, because the talisman doesn't work. Venger was like, screw these guys.
Yeah.
And after they leave, he tells like the shadow demon, he's like, that's not going to work. Yeah. And it doesn't.
So why did they have to team up with him then? We don't know. But they wouldn't have had the courage.
Right.
So they realize that the wreath
on Uni's neck,
on Uni's neck, made the Demo Dragon go white and dissolve.
Yeah, because it was Dragonbane.
Yes. So the whole time
they had the treasure.
They had the It's just like Wizard of Oz. You could go home anytime you wanted.
Yeah.
Home was in your heart. So
they saved the day.
Yep.
And then at the very end, we have the Dungeon Master makes this cryptic monologue that he might be responsible for Venger.
Yeah.
And that's where it ends.
Venger's defeated, and they're like, that Venger, we need to really get him. He's just pure evil. And then the DM is like, there was good in Venger once. Everyone makes mistakes. Venger was mine.
Yeah, Venger was my mistake. And you're like, what?
Because.
And then it ended.
In the final episode that never got released, it's revealed that Venger's true identity is the human son of the Dungeon Master.
Wow.
Now, I don't know how the gnome
spoiler alert,
could have
everybody.
A 7-foot tall son.
Well, that's not.
But that's not my judgment to make,
no.
Steve. Yeah, so that was my last fun fact that I saved until now. Sorry for everybody who's ever seen it. But, there's also the other kind of interesting piece of trivia that I didn't share before, too, is that later, a couple episodes after this, they have a conversation legitimately about whether or not they should kill him.
Yeah.
And for a kid's cartoon, it's quite more serious kind of thing. I think that, now we have cartoons that are aimed at teens or adults, and I think that kind of started with South Park and then some of like the Adult Swim stuff on Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
But we didn't really have that as much at that point in time. I mean, you do in the 30s and 40s, and then you don't for a very long time.
But because that episode, The Dragon's Graveyard, it almost got the show canceled because of that discussion.
Yeah.
About them. They were discussing killing Venger.
Yeah.
Who was an evil guy. But still, yeah, it was just too much. The FTC didn't care for it. Or the Television Violence Coalition demanded that. That's when they started having to put the warning in that we talked about earlier.
So that kind of brings us to reception. How did other people feel about it? We know how some parents kind of didn't.
Well, as we mentioned before, the level of violence was a bit controversial. Although, again, looking at it now, I don't find it to be a violent cartoon.
No, not really.
And we just mentioned the thing about the Dragon's Graveyard almost getting it canceled. And so, despite all this, the series spawned more than 100 different licenses. And the show led its time slot for the first two seasons.
Interesting. Was it on Saturday, probably?
It's Saturday possible morning? That it was Saturday morning, yeah. Mm. But, there was a lot of cartoons on at that time, and so to lead your time slot was a really big deal. Diana,
the acrobat,
was voiced by Tanya Gale Smith, and she was nominated for Outstanding Young Actress in American Voiceover at the 1984 Youth and Film Awards.
Okay.
So she was nominated for an award, and much later on, in January 2009, IGN ranked Dungeons & Dragons as the 64th on the best 100 animated series lists.
Interesting.
So it made the best 100, and it was actually 64. It was almost in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, for a show that only ran for 3 seasons, right? And only 28 episodes. I mean, there are other cartoons that we've seen that ran for, like, 2 seasons, but they had, like, 300 episodes or something, because they were cranking them out.
And it had quite a bit of controversy around it because of some of the things we discussed. But, you know, that is what it is. So what's your thoughts on Dungeons & Dragons?
I really enjoyed this. Like, a lot. I do think it's upsetting to me only because you can see the potential here, especially with the first episode. And, you know, the movie is coming out soon, which is one of the other reasons we wanted to review the cartoon.
Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Yep. Because you can see a nice balance of action, humor, storytelling, character development. You know, to a certain extent, the animation, it's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Like you said, it's Hanna-Barbera kind of elevated. It's not, we've seen some, like, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers was very good animation.
Yes.
But it's also 6 years later, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but there were huge advancements in animation at that time. So,
when you look at this compared to the other cartoons of its time, like G.I. Joe,
yeah.
Right? All those that were going on at the same time, it's definitely
on the higher level. And especially if you look at something like Scooby-Doo, which we did watch, which just doesn't have that great. So I really, really enjoyed this. I feel like I could see it being a live-action show, and I could see it being drawn out a bit more with more storytelling. So that, I think, is the only thing. But it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a Netflix show, but you could picture this as a Netflix show, except that episode one is maybe the first season.
How
they get there, how they come together, their group dynamics, yes. You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the second episode as well. There's a little bit of a chase scene in there that kind of detracted, but
don't like chase scenes.
But the rest of it moved so quickly that I didn't mind because it was a little bit of a cognitive break.
Right.
So it's not like a show where there's no story and then a 20-minute chase scene.
Right.
You know? So I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm going to go with an 8.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So I also liked it quite a bit. You know, I've got, like I said before, a lot of memories and histories with Dungeons & Dragons. And as I watched this, I was like, yeah, I kind of do remember this cartoon. And I remembered, like, Venger. I didn't remember his name, but I remembered his iconic look. You know, the look of the Dungeon Master, all of their looks. And I'm like, yeah, this is a pretty... It's done well enough that they're all different enough that they stand apart. There's a lot of teamwork. And there was a lot of callbacks, as we mentioned, to the Dungeons & Dragons game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The way they did it. And so I think it was just, I think it's really well done. Looking back, there's a lot of things we do look back on from the late 70s, early 80s, and we're like, yeah, this is really, I mean, The Incredible Hulk was one.
Yeah.
Where we're like, yeah, this Spoiler is really alert. Like this is, you know, hopefully you guys saw that last week. That would have been last week's episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, where you watch it and you're like, yeah, this aged poorly.
Mm-hmm.
This one didn't.
No, it didn't.
I mean, I could see this being on as a cartoon, and I would watch it still.
The other thing I'm going to say, Steve, is that I also, 100%, we could do a homebrew game, maybe change the classes a little bit.
Based off of this?
You give everybody that, or you even tell them, hey, watch just the first episode and develop your character.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be really fun.
Yeah.
I think that you can see how it would, you know, some cartoons are meant for kids to inspire their imagination and inspire play. And this does that.
Yeah.
And so what's your rating?
I'm going to rate it an 8 as well.
All right. So.
Yeah. 8 dice out of 10.
And was set out of 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a really good week.
Yeah.
I'm happy because it made up for last week.
Yeah, so we had 3 dice out of 5 for Astronaut Ice Cream.
Uh-huh, and then 8 out of 10 for the show. And next week we are going to do Xena Warrior Princess.
We are.
And that brings us to...
We're kind of in a fantasy kick right now.
That brings us to my favorite segment. What is Steve willing to watch?
Oh, boy.
All right. So, Steve, I chose an episode from season 3.
Okay.
And that is called Been There, Done That. The exact same day continues to start over and over again, and only Xena can unravel the mystery.
So it's like a Xena Groundhog Day.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is one of my favorite tropes. They had one similar on Star Trek, so I kind of want to see what that kind of pans out to be.
Sounds good.
You are going to have a choice from season 5. There are 6 seasons total.
Okay.
It seems... I don't... really know, we'll talk about our memories, but it seems like there was like Buffy kind of like a death thing.
Okay.
So this is after that, and this starts the new season after I think whatever that was occurred. We'll find out later. So episode 1, Fallen Angel. After being crucified by the Romans, Gabrielle's soul struggles to save Xena, who has become a demon from hell. Episode 2, Chakram. Xena has no recollection of being a warrior after she and Gabrielle are resurrected from the dead. Episode 3, Succession. Ares merges Xena and Gabrielle into the same body and forces them to fight somebody else.
Okay.
Whose name I can't pronounce. Or episode 4, Animal Attraction. Xena, Gabrielle, Joxer and Amaris travel to the town of Spamona, where Xena is shocked to learn something about herself. I don't want to say what it is.
Let's do that one.
Okay. So you've got Animal Attraction from season 5, which was in 1999. And I have season 3, and my episode is from, I think it should be from 97.
Yep. Okay.
So that's what's coming up. After that, we're going to watch Lady Hawk. And then we have right now a ton of votes for our poll.
Yeah, for the poll that we're letting you, the listeners. This is the last month that we're doing it not on Patreon, correct?
One more for April, because we're also releasing April's episode.
Oh, gotcha.
For Easter. So, we're trying to kind of build it up. But after that, it will be all exclusive to Patreon. But right now we have, I think, like 70-something votes.
Yeah, which it's really a lot of responses right now, which is excellent.
Might not sound like a lot, but I just posted it last night and we're recording this in the morning. Right. So I was like, oh, wow, people like really wanted to vote. And it's a vote for a Don Bluth movie. So we wanted to do... one of the classic animated films that I think a lot of people loved, but might not get as much play as some Disney films.
Yes.
So, we look forward to that as well. And, visit our website, StopRuiningMyChildhood.com. Support us on Patreon, patreon.com/StopRuiningMyChildhood.
It costs less than a cup of coffee.
It sure enough does. Until then, until next week, my name's Megan.
And I'm Steve.
Have a great week, everyone.